Welcome along to the Southampton audio programme for today's game against Sunderland. In today's issue, we have your feature interview, a look over the Southampton women's team, but first, a word from your manager, Russell Martin. Dear Saints fans, welcome back to St Mary's for this afternoon's Skybet Championship fixture against Sunderland. It was quite scary to see some of the pictures and videos of the fire that forced the club to postpone Wednesday's game against Preston, which was definitely the right decision. The emergency services did an amazing job, working all through the day and night, and I just hope everyone is safe. Last weekend's win at Birmingham was a big one for us. To fall behind in the first 2 minutes, the courage the players showed with the ball to really dominate the game after that was exceptional. We played some really great football, creating chance after chance, and to score 4 goals away from home in the Championship is no mean feat. What we need moving forward is a better balance, because we conceded 3 poor goals in a game where the opposition had very few opportunities in our final third. I love the spirit in this team. It shouldn't have taken a late goal to win the game, given the strong position we were in, but these players have so much character, so much togetherness, so much resilience and so much belief in what they're doing as a group, and that's made the difference for us so many times this season. One player who epitomises all of that is Will Smallbone. Will had a tough week last week, as a victim of some disgusting abuse in social media that no human being should ever be subjected to, least of all a man who has given his all for his club since he was 8 years old and carried himself brilliantly throughout his Southampton journey. That's why I wanted him to enjoy the moment with the away fans at the end of the game against Birmingham, where he produced another outstanding performance. You can tell his teammates love him too. He's a player's player, whose quality sometimes goes under the radar, but we certainly appreciate him and I'm sure he'll get a brilliant reception tonight. I love all my players. I know I'm biased, but Joe Rebo is another one I was delighted for. We missed Joe while he was away with Nigeria, as a player and a person. We love his energy around the place, and it was an amazing moment for him to be the hero by scoring the winning goal. It was an incredible scene in front of travelling Saints fans, another sold-out away end, and I'm sure we could have filled the whole stand behind the goal with a bigger allocation. Those are the moments you live for as a football fan, as a player, as a coach, anybody involved in the game. So to share that with you all was really special. I'd also like to thank the 5,500 fans who followed us to Anfield. We were all blown away by that on the Wednesday night. That was another game in which we showed amazing courage with the ball, but we just weren't clinical enough to take our chances, and in the end that was the difference between the sides. Today, we welcome a really talented Sunderland side to St Mary's under interim head coach Mike Dodds. They pushed Leicester all the way on Tuesday night, and we're unlucky not to get a result out of that game. We know how dangerous they can be. Our last two home matches haven't seen us hit the standards we've set for ourselves. We had won 11 in a row at St Mary's before the games here against Hull and Millwall, and that's the level we need to get back to from now until the end of the season. If we can do that, and just be as horrible to play against away from home, we'll give ourselves a great chance of achieving what we want to achieve. We march on. 6 of Southampton FC women's players were on duty in the February international break, with milestone appearances for Laura Rafferty and Megan Collette. In the UEFA Women's Nation League playoffs, Rafferty's Northern Ireland side faced Montenegro in a bid to keep their place in League B of the competition's group rankings. The Saints defender played the entirety of both games as Northern Ireland won 2-0 in Podgorica before securing their League B status with a draw in the second leg at Windsor Park. The second game was preceded by a proud moment for Rafferty as she led her country out as captain for the first time. Meanwhile, another milestone came for fellow Saints defender Collette, who made her debut for the England under-19s after being out of the international setup for a while. Collette played the full 90 minutes on her debut at under-19s level, as England narrowly lost to France. She then played an hour in the second game as the side fought back from 2 goals down to draw 2-2 with Norway. Elsewhere for Saints' young lionesses, there was a unique opportunity for Ella Morris, Lucia Kendall and Molly Pike with the under-23s, who joined Serena Weigman's senior side in Marbella. They kicked off with a defeat against Spain. Pike was the only member to start as she played 72 minutes before being replaced by Kendall, who saw out the game. Morris then played the full 90 minutes of the second match, a 1-1 draw against the Netherlands. Finally, Alice Griffiths enjoyed another training camp with Wales, but was unused in their friendly victory over the Republic of Ireland. Shay Adams' football career and life has changed considerably since he arrived on the South Coast as a 22-year-old, rough and ready to live his Premier League dream. Now he's an international, on the cusp of playing in his second major tournament, and a family man with a burning desire to help Saints return to the top tier. Southampton has become home for Shea Adams. It's nearly 5 years since the striker arrived at St Mary's from Birmingham, where he spent 3 seasons in the Championship and struck 22 goals in his farewell campaign. Adams had earned his shot at playing in the Premier League. Hailing from Leicester, he was never given a chance by his hometown club and was released by Coventry at the age of 14. The long road to the top had to start all over again, from the bottom. Adams played non-league football for Odby Town and Ilkeston in the East Midlands, where he was a central midfielder. He got his big break at Sheffield United, then in League One, and scored his first professional goals in fairy tale fashion, a brace off the bench against Tottenham in a League Cup semi-final at a raucous Bramall Lane. The Blades were blunted by Spurs late on, but Adams' rise was only just getting started. After conquering the Championship, he spent 4 seasons in the Premier League with Saints, earning international recognition with Scotland, for whom he qualifies for his grandmother. On Saturday, he returned to Birmingham, contributing heavily to one of the most dramatic wins of his Saints career. Adams dropped deep, spraying the sort of diagonal pass he practiced as a midfielder, as Adam Armstrong sprinted into the space he vacated to score. When he played up against the centre-backs, he was typically robust, made sure the ball stuck, and helped Saints push up the pitch he knows better than most. He hit the post and brushed the side netting either side of his goal, which was characteristic of his spirit in never giving up, even when he temporarily lost his footing and was outnumbered in the Birmingham box, as he threaded a low shot through a crowded penalty area to put Saints in front for the first time. He didn't celebrate. Adams was substituted at 3-all, 5 minutes from the end of the 90, with a tense game of great significance at both ends of the table hanging in the balance. He was applauded off by the home fans. He responded by acknowledging all 4 sides of St Andrews. In a week in which Saints teammates Will Smallbone was the subject of online abuse, and in a social media world described by his manager as a cesspit of negativity and toxicity, Adams felt the love from a rival. "It was nice," he smiles. "The respect is there from my side and obviously from them as well to give me the reception that they did. Before the game, I was nervous. I don't really get nervous before games. But it was quite strange having that feeling. But controlling it in the right way in order to play my best and to play well was nice. And to get the win as well. It was the first time I've been back there in a few years since I moved to Southampton. So it was quite nice to see a few familiar faces. And I got a nice little reception as well." Adams is not one to chase the limelight, but it's clear that it meant a lot to him in an age that it's become fashionable to boo ex-players. He's typically modest about his form too. "I don't think so," he replies when asked if it was one of his best performances of the season, simply summarising it as a weird game for me personally. His best display of a quite steady campaign, he reckons, was the Swansea away game in which Saints broke the club record unbeaten run with a stylish 3-1 win that showcased Adams' ability to be the team's target man, playmaker and goalscorer, all rolled into one when he's at the peak of his powers. His St Andrews strike took him into double figures for league goals, coming from just 16 Championship starts, averaging a goal every 150 minutes this season. "Not as good as Adam Armstrong, but still trying to get there," he chuckles. Armstrong is Saints' leading scorer, and his 28 goal contributions, 17 goals and 11 assists, is the highest in England's top 3 divisions. "I think as a striker, you're always judged off goals, and to be scoring is always nice, but I've always said it throughout my time here, it's about where the club are going to be. If that means not scoring goals and the team are winning and we're in second place or first place, I'm taking that all day." Adams and Armstrong close off the field. Both became fathers for the first time within 2 weeks of another in late 2022. Adams to a baby girl, Elsia, and Armstrong to a boy, Axel. The Scotland international is delighted to see his strike partner flourishing in a Saints shirt after some tough times, something he can relate to himself. "We went on a similar path in regards to not scoring as many goals as we would have hoped, and the fans probably expected. But now everyone can see that hard work pays off and we're both doing well, so it's nice to come through that moment and give back everything to everyone who expected so much of us," he explains. "It's a really nice feeling. His wife is pregnant again as well, so I think he's clinical on and off the pitch." Adams insists there's no competition between them to top the goal-scoring charts, but he's enjoying linking up with his best mate. It's a combination that seems to work for Saints, as illustrated by Armstrong's goal at Birmingham. "Armour's had an amazing season this year and there's still so many games to play," he enthuses. "Also his assists as well, that's what stands out, because as a forward player you don't really see that many assists. This year it's been good, because we've played together more frequently than times before. I've always enjoyed playing with him because he's so fast, so any ball in behind that I play for him, he's always going to get on the end of. His finishing and training is amazing, so it's no surprise to everyone at the club that he's scoring this many goals. It's always a pleasure to play with him. Selfless on the pitch, it's in his nature to pass praise to others. But Adams isn't doing too badly himself. He's now scored 8 goals in his last 14 appearances in all competitions, a purple patch dating back to Boxing Day. It's clear his only target between now and the end of the season is to get Saints into the automatic promotion spots. But beyond that, there's Euro 2024 to look forward to, in which Scotland have been drawn against the host Germany in the opening game of the tournament. Adams knows a run of form now will boost his chances of starting that mouth-watering match in Munich on June 14th. It's going to be in the opening ceremony. What an experience that's going to be, he says, his mind wandering. There's so much competition for places up for grabs in the national team, so hopefully we can get a call up, but it's going to be an amazing experience. I've just got to keep going with performances and just keep being relentless. That will warrant a place in the team. Adams, who played under Ralf Hasenhüttl for the first 3 years of his Saints career, is starting to sound like Russell Martin with language like that. Relentless is very much a Martinism. The pair share a close bond, with the manager having played for Scotland himself on 29 occasions prior to Adams' first international call-up in 2021. Every time the Scottish boys link up in training and score a goal, he's always like, "That's why Scotland are going to the Euros," Adams laughs. As someone who lived through last season's struggles, the 27-year-old offers a valuable perspective on the work Martin has done to transform the mood inside the club. "Last season, I said it in past interviews, was one of the hardest I've ever been involved in," he reflects. "For the gaffer to come in and turn things around, it's just a completely different club and different vibe as well. Everyone can see it. The environment is so good. Everyone's laughing, everyone's joking, but in a serious way. So it's credit to the gaffer and the coaching staff for creating that buzz again around the training ground and around the city. That buzz is built on the Saints of Promotion Challenge, has brought the fresh excitement to St Mary's match days, with Martin's men playing an enterprising attacking style, as the fans in love with their team once more." It's a far cry from the end of last season, when Adams posted a statement on social media following Saints' relegation from the Premier League after 11 years in the top flight. "We have failed," he said, addressing the fans. "Anyone that knows me knows that I don't give up or quit easily. We'll bring the club back to where it belongs to you." Since then, the striker has been the subject of speculation linking him with moves away last summer and in January, but he remains a Saint, now with his family ties to the city, and more determined than ever to bring Premier League football back to the club that means so much to him. When your kid is born there and you've had most of your life and your football down there, it's always special, and Southampton will always play a part in our lives, especially my daughter's life, he says. A club like Southampton is a Premier League team. Any team that's come here this season can see how well established and how big the club is in terms of a fan base and in terms of staff around the place as well. It's a Premier League club, but for me personally, it's just about, I said it in a statement at the end of last season, getting the club back to where it should be again, because that's where we deserve to be. In this league, it's relentless, he adds, using that word again. So to keep winning games and to keep building the momentum is going to be huge, as we've seen with the previous 25 weren't unbeaten, so there's no reason why we can't do that again. Every game is going to be massive. We cannot afford to drop points. Now time for the local lowdown. We asked opposition expert James Hunter, Sunderland AFC columnist for We Are Sunderland, to preview this afternoon's encounter from the visitors' point of view. With 10 games to go, how do you rate Sunderland's season so far? Sunderland have shot themselves in the foot this season. After reaching the playoffs last term, there was a real feeling that the club could build on that platform and at least finish in the top six once again. But they have been let down by poor recruitment, both last summer and in January, and by bad decision-making over the role of head coach. Sacking Tony Mowbray in December was a huge mistake. Replacing him with Michael Beale was just as bad, and now interim boss Mike Dodds is minding the shop until May. At best, it has mid-table mediocrity written all over it. How was Tony Mowbray's departure viewed at the time, and has that view changed with the benefit of hindsight? Mowbray was sacked, having taken 8 points from the previous 9 games, but with the club just 3 points outside the playoffs and the team playing entertaining, attacking football, he retained the backing of the majority of fans, and they were baffled by the decision. Mowbray's departure owed more to the comments he made that appeared to question the club's transfer model, which were viewed as hearsay by those in the boardroom. Sunderland fans have seen the club go backwards at an alarming rate since Mowbray left. Notwithstanding his current health problems, it's fair to say that the vast majority would still rather he was in charge. Why didn't it work out for Michael Beale, who lasted only 12 games in charge? Beale was the wrong man at the wrong club. He was not the club's first choice to replace Mowbray, and when he took over, he was viewed as an underwhelming appointment right from the off. Beale suffered from being the man who followed a popular figure in Mowbray, and he proved unable to deliver the results that would have given him a chance of winning fans over. It's now 5 defeats in a row for Sunderland, but has there been an upturn in performance or change in approach under interim boss Mike Dodds? There has been a little bit more tactical flexibility shown under Dodds, such as the switch to a back three against Leicester City in midweek, but ultimately he is dealing with the same squad with the same glaring weakness, a near total lack of firepower from the strikers who were recruited last summer. Sunderland have lost all three of their games under Dodds' current spell as interim boss, so there's been no uptick in results, and the improvement in performance has been negligible. Who are the players to watch out for in the absence of the injured Jack Clark? Tough question. Sunderland was so reliant on Clark that losing him to an injury has been a hammer blow, particularly with Patrick Roberts also out. As far as attackers are concerned, Nazari Roussin is the best of the rest, but it is telling that in Clark's absence, Sunderland's most dangerous player are probably midfielders such as Joe Bellingham and Dan Neil. And finally, how do you see the game going today? It won't be a repeat of September's 5-0 Sunderland win, that I can promise you. I just can't see where the goals are going to come from for Sunderland, and I haven't kept a clean sheet since New Year's Day, so it is hard to see past the Southampton victory. But hope springs eternal.